Privat from the European Trade Union Institute. This is co-written the paper with Sotiria Theodoropoulou, and the title of the paper that Andy will present is called The Greek Tragedy, the Abject Failure of National Austerity in the Context of an Unfinished Monetary Union.
This is joint work with Sotiria Theodoropoulou. You win a prize if you guess which of us is the Greek expert, right? I mean, slightly more seriously, we've sought here to embed the analysis of the Greek situation in the wider European context, and my work is basically focused on economic governance issues at the European level. I'm not a Greek specialist, so the insights on Greece come largely from Sotiria. And I've only been able to incorporate them in a slightly rudimentary way, and I'm hoping indeed to profit very much from these 2 days to improve my own knowledge. I mean, this is our main thesis. Of course, now it's obvious to everybody that the Greek austerity programs have failed, right? So it's important to be a little bit specific about the claim we're making here. The claim we're making here is that actually that should have been obvious to everybody also when these programs were launched, and that's the sort of burden of proof we hope to meet. Not that they have failed, but they were bound to fail. And to do that, it's necessary to run through a little bit, I think, a bit of empirical background on the situation of the Greek economy during the boom and then also during the crisis. And then I will focus most of my time on the what it actually means to be a part of a monetary union in the situation that Greece was in. Then look at the austerity programs in a very overview type way, and see what policymakers were thinking about when they introduced them, and then go through the reasons why this had to fail. I mean, it might be nice to start with a little anecdote. Again, one of these names I'm going to struggle with here is the Papa Constantinou, the then finance minister of Greece, when he'd just been appointed, came to Brussels. I believe it was in February. Actually, I've written spring here. I believe it was in February, and announced his first new package of measures, and he was bombarded by questions. By journalists and by policymakers and people in the room, and basically all the questions were one question, and the questions were, are you tough enough to get these measures through? Right? That was the thing that people were interested in at the time in Brussels. And one person asked a different question, if you get these measures through, what will happen to your economy? Right? And the person who asked this question was actually myself. I think, you know, people were actually surprised that the people were actually asking this question at the time. But I mean, I think it was also a bit of a sense that if other people had their, you know, eyes and ears about them and their heads screwed on, right, and understood a little bit about basic sort of macroeconomics, they would perhaps have been asking the same question. So again, the tenor a little bit, it's not been a lack of political will so much, perhaps that as well, but essentially an issue about understanding demand-side policy failures, again within the context of within the context of a this is not good. This is not good.
It's accurate. It sort of disappeared off the graph. It cannot be disproved.
This is not good. What we do, we hook my computer up. Perhaps this will. I have this
open office on my computer, which is basically a home nightmare.
Keep talking to us while we set up.
I apologize for this.
That's no problem. Okay. That's this one. You need the password.
I just need to put perhaps, yeah, the first two graphs are not so so important. So the graphs are basically graphs of the performance of the Greek economy against the euro area averages and also against other sort of benchmark, if you like, southern European countries, Spain, Italy, and Portugal. And what you see actually, and this is again, I think, often forgotten. I mean, Greece had not just a very sort of, you know, ephemeral bubble, but it had a genuine good period of good performance, showing much of the EMU period, outperformed the other peripheral countries, and also the euro area average in terms of growth up to the crisis. Even in terms of productivity in the other peripheral countries, you had very employment intensive growth. In Greece, you had actually strong, somewhat volatile productivity productivity growth. You had a steady convergence, and that I would call it to show you, of the unemployment rate. From initially high levels, from memory, considerably above 10%, I think 12% perhaps, down to essentially the euro area average of around 7% just before the crisis hit. Perfect, thank you. So this is productivity growth. So here you see, so Greece is in the blue line. You see this very impressive, actually, convergence of the unemployment rate down to the euro area average. But on the other hand, you have a unit labour cost, nominal unit labour cost. So this is essentially hourly labour costs, allowing for the growth of productivity. So despite the rapid productivity growth, you also had this pattern, more or less in line with the other southern European countries considered here, actually. And within the context of a monetary union, unit labour costs are a good measure of essentially international competitiveness. So this was obviously a problem. You also had this widening current account deficit, again in layman's terms, a very substantial surplus of imports over exports, which was corrected at the end of the period, compared with a balanced current account at the level of the euro area. So this is essentially the German surplus is on the one hand, and the southern, and particularly the Greek deficits, on the other. This is important, and I'll come back to this. You see in the first part of the period the substantial decline in real interest rates. These are long-term interest rates deflated by the rate of inflation. So you had, as a result of EMU, a very strong sort of potential for rapid growth, driven by the fact that money was cheap. Essentially, money was cheap, but it was a lot cheaper, in fact, than in the core European countries. And you see, of course, this huge spike at the end, which is as a result of the market speculation. Here you see the poor performance on government deficits, consistently, following the broad pattern of the other countries, but always sort of you know, 2 or 3 percentage points of GDP, let's say, performing worse than the other countries. Interesting to see that on this measure, the other southern countries, Italy, Spain, are very much in line with the euro area, the euro area averages. So this I will put my finger on as, you know, as the one thing that really was a national failing, if you like, in my analysis, to have allowed this situation to develop as it did. The problems, this is just comparing the revenue and the spending side. So basically the story here is actually wasn't a spending problem, right? The spending problem was more or less in line in terms of proportion of GDP with the other countries. The problem was the top graph, which is the revenue side. So you just have a sort of consistent inability to generate the revenues you need. As a result of that, government debt is permanently higher, is never reduced despite the boom, and of course explodes towards the end of the period. So this was a very rapid gallop through a lot of graphs. The point about these graphs, what I would like to give you as a main message, or a couple of main messages, was that, you know, there was a substantial period of real economic progress and success in Greece, and that was at least partly due, I would say that was primarily due, largely due, to this virtuous circle of having joined EMU, having been a high inflation country, having benefited from this rapid fall in real interest rates, and then being in a virtuous circle, having a high inflation rate meant that real interest rates were lower than in the core countries, and this generated a boom which partly went into housing, etc., etc., etc. The key error I've also already mentioned was to fail to sort of lean against the wind here with fiscal policy. Which would have put Greece, if it had managed to do that, in a much better situation, I think, going into the crisis. But the issue is that what had been a boon to the Greek economy actually turned into a trap when the crisis hit. Again, I'm not telling you, I'm sure, anything you don't know. As a member of monetary union, you lose this these key adaption options of devaluing your exchange rate against your main trading partners and regaining competitiveness that way, and of having an independent monetary policy which can do what your economy needs, as opposed to doing what the aggregate euro area economy needs, or supposedly needs, right? And we saw that very clearly in the course of this year, the early part of this year, when people were optimistic about the growth prospects, notably in the core countries, notably in Germany, which appeared to be, you know, taking off. And what did the ECB do? It raised interest rates. Right. So, you know, I mean, you can argue whether this was good for Germany as well. I would argue that it was a mistake in any case, but it was certainly a disaster for Greece, right, and for the other peripheral countries which needed higher interest rates, like the proverbial hole in the head, right? So these are the key issues. Actually, the fiscal constraints in the crisis have not been. You might think that, you know, the Stability and Growth Pact has been a constraint there, but in fact it hasn't, because the recession has been so deep that essentially the rules haven't been applied, right? The constraints on the fiscal side have come very much from the adjustment packages. Okay, so where I see the issue then for Greece, why we talk about how it being locked into a monetary union is part of the problem, is that it has this, what I call this, I don't know if this is a good phrase, an impossible pentangle. I mean, it simultaneously had to do two things, to improve its price competitiveness and to consolidate public finances. I mean, you know, seemingly you have one instrument that would actually do that for you. Fiscal austerity, right? Fiscal austerity, taken by itself, no, improves the fiscal situation, and by driving up unemployment, it also exerts downward pressure on prices and wages, and brings about your improvement in price competitiveness. That essentially was the philosophy, right? That was the basic thinking behind the behind the packages. But why it becomes an impossible pentangle is that you have three variables which are key for your for the fiscal position, right? One is indeed the primary budget surpluses or deficits, so the fiscal policy. But equally important are the rate of nominal GDP growth, so GDP at current prices, and nominal interest rates. And nominal GDP growth was being depressed. Why? Because Greece was obviously going through a painful recession, so real growth was slow. But it also had, and this is the first point, this price competitiveness adjustment to make. So there was also downward pressure on wages and prices as well. So GDP was getting, nominal GDP was getting squeezed by these measures anyway. On top of that, the austerity measures pushed the rate of nominal GDP growth down even further. The second variable is interest rates, and essentially Greece was, well, it's a slightly more complicated story because there are different interest rates in the economy, but I mean for the, as far as the sovereign was concerned, essentially Greece was taken out of the market and as part of the various troika-led programs it was put under, and the huge error was made to lend to Greece at a penalty rate. Right? I mean the countries like Germany, who at the time could borrow at 3%, were complaining about the fact that they were taking on responsibilities for Greece, when in fact what they were doing was borrowing money at 3% and lending it to Greece at 6%. Right? So this is like what a bank does, right? This is not what a solidaristic community does. But this dichotomy between upward pressure on interest rates and downward pressure on nominal GDP growth was an important part of this impossibility pentangle. The last element of it was the Greek banking system. Which, as all national banking systems do, held to a considerable extent its assets in domestic sovereign debt. So every time the sovereign debt came under pressure, this weakened the banking system further. The banking system refuses to lend, and you get this spiral back into the real economy. So these interacting forces were essentially what put Greece, in my view, and all the other southern European or peripheral European countries, in an impossible situation. And that was what necessitated the external support. The problem was the conditionality that was attached to this support, and as I've already mentioned, the punitive interest rates. Good. I'm going to have to speed up. So the next part will be to look at the in a more detailed way, the sort of impossibility of the adjustment. I mean, we've had by the last speaker already an overview of the measures. Let me. I mean, there's a bit of a debate, and I'd be interested to hear what you have to say about that. To what extent the promised measures were actually implemented, but again, I'll skip over that. Let me, Dimitris, if I may ask for just another minute. What? Do you remember the claim was that this should have been foreseen, right? And there is a whole literature on the conditions that should apply for contractionary fiscal policy, so austerity measures, to actually have an expansionary effect on the economy, or at least not to have too dire a contractionary effect. And I've listed the main conditions for you here. To be very short, the short story is, these are the conditions, and they don't apply, right? They don't apply to Greece, they don't apply to Greece at all, not even a tiny bit. And all the signs were, for anyone really who looked at the data, that this was not going to work. Essentially, it was a bet on what Mr. Papakonstantinou said in that February, at that meeting, which was that everybody was going to be so happy that they thought, because they thought that finally something was going to be done about the Greek mess, that they would all of a sudden go into the shops and spend money like crazy. And or that Greece would regain competitiveness in a quick way and expand its net exports, because these are the two other sectors. If the government sector is contracting, essentially either the domestic private sector has to go out and spend more, or the foreign sector has to spend more on Greek products, i.e. Greece has to expand its net exports, and that wasn't going to happen. You see here, I'm going to have to skip over them, Greece is a very closed economy. It has a very small tradable goods sector for a country of its size. I mean, it has a tradable goods sector about the size of countries with a population five or six times bigger, right? And it has, compared with countries more of its size, like Sweden and Austria, it has a tiny export sector. I mean, this is macro 101. I mean, you know, the fact that the European policymakers and Greek policymakers didn't understand that they weren't going to get a big boost from the trading goods sector simply because it's so small as a share of the economy, right? I mean, it's almost incredible that they didn't understand that.
But that doesn't include tourism. It doesn't include tourism.
It should include tourism, yeah. It includes services, yeah. I mean, it's really a very...
Neither trade unions understood, though.
They may well not have understood that either. There's some more technical issues about these sectoral balances. I'm going to skip over. There is a debate, again, in the literature about structural reforms. I mean, part of the package was about, you want me to finish, about structural reforms. And it's generally accepted even by organizations like the OECD, which have pushed structural reforms very hard, that they also can have a negative demand effects in the short run, and I'm more or less through. I hope I've convinced you that this was an accident that really could have been foretold, and that we should never have embarked on this path in the first place.